All right. Welcome back to the Year of Plenty podcast, the show to help you get closer to your food source and learn the skills to make every year a year of plenty. Topics we discuss in the show here revolve around traditional foodways, wild food, homesteading, nutrition, home cooking, and so much more. As always, I'm your host, Poldy Wieland, and I have my lovely co-host, Lindy, today again.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. It's a very sunny day here in Montana, and I'm excited to record here and then go outside and hopefully find some foraged goodies on a hike.
Play in the sun.
Yeah.
I'm excited for some sunshine.
Much needed. Yeah. I know we've been talking about sunshine a lot in the podcast, but who doesn't like it?
People with sunburns.
I guess. I would say. Very pale people probably don't like it.
I'm very pale.
You are
very
pale. I still like it. I'm pretty pale right now, too.
I'm a burn and continue to burn kind of gal. I don't tan.
No.
The tan just kind of peels away to more white skin.
It's because you're like from the northern climates.
I guess so.
So we have an interesting podcast today, I would say. Mm-hmm. We're going to be announcing a big change that's coming our way in a few days here. Exciting.
Very exciting.
Also a little sad, but also exciting. We're going to talk about how we plan to grow food in this new way that we're going to talk about in a sec here, and then also what plans we're focusing on.
So you know, elusive.
I didn't realize that with like reading off the episode overview, I would kind of be giving away the big change.
So no overview?
No, we're doing the overview. So then we're going to get into vertical gardening ideas for inspiration in case you want to start growing food in less space. And then we're going to talk about some of the types of plants that are kind of ideal for vertical gardening. And yeah, so let's get into it. So the big change that's coming our way is that we are moving.
Yeah.
Yeah, moving into a new place where we have been renting here on a 50-acre sheep ranch, hobby ranch, and it's been an awesome place to be.
Yeah. I've been here for 2 years. You've been here for about a year.
About a year now.
Yeah.
And it has allowed us to do a lot of cool things like grow more veggies and have quail and all that, which we're very thankful for. But unfortunately now with this life and where we're at and how we're growing, we decided to move to a new space. It's going to have a lot less grow space, almost none, and no room for quail.
Yep. Yep,
unfortunately. Yep.
We'll actually be able to store all of our gear, though, so that will be very exciting. So there's both more space and significantly less space at the same
time. More storage space, which is a big reason why we're moving, but less grow space and whatnot. Yep. But that's, you know, it's exciting because it's going to pose a new challenge, and it's posed a challenge of, hey, how can we continue to grow food with even less space than we had now? We still didn't have a ton of space here, but at least enough to, you know, get somewhere.
Yeah, and have things a little more spread out. I think now the challenge is going to be, how do we take that spread out blueprint that we had before and compact it?
Yeah. How do we do as much or even more with less space?
Yeah.
We probably can't do more just realistically, but how can we just maximize the space that we have? And the answer for us after doing a bunch of research now and just learning about, you know, growing in less space is vertical gardening.
Yep.
So that's what we want to talk about today. And hopefully inspire some of you guys who might not have as much grow space at home to start gardening. You know, or even if you have a bunch of grow space, maybe you can use vertical gardening to just get even more out of what you have, because there's a lot you can do there outside. So we're not going to be talking about like the vertical commercial gardening in big towers, you know.
The kind of hydroponic
like indoor plastic towers. Yeah.
That's not.
Well, no, I'm talking about like full-on buildings, you know, commercially.
Oh, yeah,
these vertical farms.
Yep.
That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, how can you use your garden space inside and outdoors to just at home get more out of your grow
space? And inexpensive ways is one thing that we've really been focusing on, is how we can do it both in the most practical and inexpensive ways possible.
Yeah, like on a budget. Budget. We don't have a bunch of money to throw that way, so we're trying to do as much as we can here.
Yep.
So for our new layout, I'm just going to share a picture, and I'll be blending that in so everyone watching can see. But it's basically a condo, And we have a small patio in the back with some garden space. The garden space is shared though with other residents, so we really just have this like, what is it, concrete? Yeah, a concrete patio with like gravel on the left and right to really maximize. So it's not much, and we also want to be sitting out there. So we've gotten a bit creative in terms of like how we've been thinking about turning this into a garden space while we can still make it livable.
Yep.
And the big answer is for sure grow bags. We won't be able to plant anything in the ground.
Yeah, there's a big no-go. We can't have anything on the grass, and we can only have things to a certain point on the gravel. So really where the cement pad is where we're allowed to grow. Yeah. And there's no permanent structures.
And some gravel left and right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we also have in front of the house, like kind of on the sides of the garage, and another strip of gravel there that we can maybe utilize. We'll see how it goes. We'll have to meet our neighbors first and make sure they don't, you know, see an issue with it and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can just offer them some veggies if
we grow any.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, you know, because where the patio is actually perfect for growing. It's like a south-facing side.
Which is why we chose this place, too.
That was a big reason for choosing this place. And trust us, we tried to find rentals with a lot of gardening space, but here in Bozeman, around Bozeman, Montana, don't move here.
Yeah, no.
It's tough.
It's pretty brutal.
It's expensive. There's not a bunch out there. So.
And there's a lot of restrictions for renters about, you know, what you can and cannot do.
Right.
A lot of it needs to be very removable. It can't leave any permanent marks. You can't damage the grass in a lot of places. So.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work to find the right place, but you definitely can.
Yeah. So this is what we have to work with. And I've also like, you know, last year I tried to grow a bunch of things in grow bags, bunch of different veggies, even a melon. This year I'm just kind of like niching down hard and I'm like, okay, I can't do everything well.
Yeah.
And if I want to really learn more about it, let's like dial it down. Try to focus like on one species or so. And for me, that is squash. I am a sucker for squash. Like summer and winter squashes are just so tasty. Mm-hmm. Like they are, you know, super versatile in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. You can grow a lot of squash from like one plant in terms of food and volume. They're nutritious. And one of my favorite things about them is that they like can be kept way into the winter.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They store so easy. Especially the winter squashes.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, squash is going to be the thing I focus on this year. We'd love to hear what you guys are doing. So hit us up on, you know, X or Instagram. I'd love to hear, like send us a DM. I'd love to hear what you're doing.
One request that I have is if anyone has any recipes on how to can squash of some kind, I would love to be sent a little bit of information
on those. Right,
we
haven't done that. So that would be really cool. That'd be such a good thing to have in the pantry, canned squash. I love that idea.
Canned squash soup and cubes or however you want to do it. But
So we'll see how it goes. We're going to be documenting it all on like YouTube with videos and X, and then also the podcasts and Instagram, just reels and whatnot. Just trying to keep you guys updated and see how our little urban homesteading experiment goes, at least the outdoor grow portion of it. Then we are also going to try to use the inside space, the south-facing windows to grow, you know, herbs, smaller things inside.
Yeah, I'll have a lot of my apothecary herbs because I do still plan on doing that inside because most of them are, they do really well inside and you can winter them and they'll continue to come back over the next year. So I'm going to do a lot of the herbs inside. And then my only thing is I want one tomato plant outside because I love tomatoes. Those fresh tomatoes are just,
I'm sure we'll find a spot for it. They are really good. They are fun. I wish you could find those in the wild.
I do too.
That'd be very fun to go out and find some wild tomatoes. They'd probably be really tiny and have a ton of seeds in them. Like most wild ancestors of a lot of cultivated or domesticated plants that we have these days. But I've selected specific squashes that I want to share with you guys that I think you're going to do well for this experiment we're running. So summer squash and winter squash, both of them, there's differences between the both. And I know, Linda, you recently didn't know there was a difference.
Yeah, I thought squash was squash and
I mean, squash is kind of squash.
Yeah, I didn't know that there was different bush growing patterns for squash. I didn't know that there were so many different varieties. I grew up in Montana with the squash from the supermarket. So acorn, butternut, and that's pretty much all of it.
Ricotta, probably. That's one you see a lot.
We never got
spaghetti
anything
squash.
Other,
I'm sure. I'm sure.
And spaghetti squash.
Spaghetti squash.
Those are the only ones we ever bought. Those are the only ones that I knew existed. Unfortunately, until we started our squash journey.
And they're all great squash varieties, but when you start growing your own, I mean, that's a major benefit of growing your own stuff, right? Is you can try these varieties that you just can't get at the grocery store, because the grocery store is going to have like fan favorites that are, you know, economically worthy of, you know, to be grown by farmers, and also what people have demand for.
The quick tried and true, you know.
Yeah, but there's so many fun squash varieties, which is super exciting to me. So difference between summer and winter squash, though, the summer squash is usually, you know, harvestable a lot earlier in the summer, whereas winter squash will usually be harvestable way closer to winter. So usually I see, like, for summer squash, I think around like 40 to 50 days until it's ready. And then winter squash, like anywhere to 80 to 110 days from what I've seen. Now, I'm sure there is some summer, you know, I haven't honestly, I paid more attention to winter squash than summer squash. But last year we grew a really cool zucchini variety, which is a summer squash. So zucchini, yellow squash, those are summer squashes. They tend to have more tender skin. They can, you know, if you let them go too long before you harvest them, their rind will get tough, but you kind of want to harvest them when they're still somewhat immature, have a really soft skin so you can eat all that. And
they don't get too many seeds then.
They don't have as many seeds as winter squash either. And then they also, you know, have more bushy growth habits, whereas the winter squash is going to just vine out and sprawl and just grow all over the ground. And they're also, the winter squash, like I said, is harvested much later, and you really wait for that plant, that fruit, to be super mature, develop a tough rind, and usually don't eat the rind. Although there are some, like delicata, where you can eat the rind. Hokkaido, it's also like, it's called red curry. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, that one's delicious. Yeah. I think that's my favorite squash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely up there for me. The issues here with Montana, that the Hokkaidos I've seen have like 100+ days of grow season. We have such a short growing season here. So that's why I selected very specific squash for this year. So we're going to do one that we grew last year already, which is the Fisher's winter squash. And I'm super, like, still excited about this one, because it's actually bred here in this little town that we live in Montana. So it's like, it's meant for this region, which is tough to find. Like, there are all these heirloom varieties out there, meaning like old breeds that people have treasured for a long time. They, you know, they can be used to save seeds, grow new plants from, unlike a lot of hybridized varieties. And the heirlooms just have been around for a long time. They're very often, they're very attuned to the region that they were bred in. So I was, you know, trying to find a squash that would be good for this area. And I found out that we had an old grow operation here in this town that we live in. And they closed down, like, I think like 30 or 40 years ago, but another seed company had found, had gotten their seeds again and started, you know, picking the ones that grew well and breeding them again and selling them. And one of them is this Fisher squash. So it's a squash that vines, I think, like maybe like 6 foot out, 6 to 8 feet. And it's a winter squash. It's got a very hard rind, which is good because we have like gophers and not gophers. What are they? The ground squirrels. Ground squirrels and stuff around here that would want to demolish them. And they kind of turn pinkish, the fruit, green to pink. And yeah, they're just, last year we grew them, and they have a very yellow, nutty flesh, very savory, super good.
They're so tasty.
That one we have to do again for sure, just for the fact of, you know, the tradition of this breed being from this area. And the other one, so two new ones I'm going to grow, as far as winter squash and summer squash goes. So for the summer squash, I'm going to try actually three more. I'm going to try the Early Prolific Straight Neck. It's an organic variety, heirloom variety. What are you laughing at?
I just think it's called the straight neck.
The straight neck. It's a yellow squash, and I'll be blending in a picture and all that. It's non-GMO, USDA organic certified, and it's an all-American selection winner in 1938. So it's another heirloom variety that's been around for a long time, and it takes about 48 days to maturity. So we'll be harvesting this, yeah.
That's great.
Short. That's why it's called Early Prolific Straight Neck. And it's also more of like a bushy variety, which I forgot to mention that earlier, I think. No, I mentioned that about the summer squash, that they tend to bush more instead of grow these long vines like the winter squash. So I'm super excited about that one. And then another one that I found that I ordered now is a round zucchini summer squash. So it's a zucchini. So it's still a summer squash, but it's round. And I figured like, I figured it'd be fun because it's a super bushy variety and it doesn't grow very tall at all. So they say 45 days to maturity, compact bush up to 25 inches tall and 36 inches wide.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
So it's not big and it grows like, instead of having giant zucchinis like last year, we had this Italian, it was called Cocelle, I forgot the name. It's an Italian heirloom variety. Amazing zucchinis, but they're like green and white, but they were just super long and with less space. Now I'm like, well, why not have a plant that does, you know, smaller fruits, but more of them. And this one, I guess the fruits are going to be 3 to 4 inches. So super excited. And then winter squash wise, besides, we already talked about the Fisher's Mountaineer winter squash. And then the other one that I want to do is called the Table King Acorn Winter Squash. And this is also a very like famous winter squash heirloom variety, 80 days to maturity, which for a winter squash is really nice. Like I said, they're usually like 100 plus from what I've seen. And, you know, who doesn't like acorn squash?
Squirrels. They prefer acorns.
Oh, that's true.
Sorry.
It's true. It's probably true.
That was a pretty
now,
bad joke.
Now watch us get like a bunch of squirrels in the backyard eating our acorn
nothing
squash.
But squirrels. Our next door neighbor is going to have a squirrel hatchery.
Yeah. I mean, there are no trees kind of where we're going to. So that'll maybe this is what they're looking for. And this plant only has 4-foot vines, which is also great for a winter squash. So, you know, by choosing your varieties like this, you can also do more in less space. You might think, well, I have no grow space. But hey, there are varieties that others have utilized and bred because they had a similar situation like you, you know?
Yep.
They also didn't have a lot of space. So these are the ones we're checking out. And then I even found a melon, a Bozeman melon, it's called.
That's so sweet.
That's also bred by the Fisher company, or was bred back in the day. And it's just weird to like think about Montana having its own like melon breed.
Yeah.
You know?
Montana melons. Come get them while they're melony.
Yeah.
You know?
That was a really good sales pitch.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I should be in marketing.
Yeah, maybe not.
Ah.
A salesman.
Sales lady.
Sales lady.
Yeah.
How would you sell that melon to people?
Hopefully I could grow it first and then I would put it on a stand and...
Like, would you do melon slices? Would you call them like grown in Bozeman, Montana?
Slice a day keeps the doctor away? I have no idea.
We'll work on those sales and marketing skills.
Yeah, maybe not for me. I am excited though, because it does sound like we'll have some squash that vine out and some that bush.
Yeah.
So we can plant, you know, squash plant here with another one that vines over here, grow this one up, grow that one out.
Yep.
That's perfect.
Exactly. That's kind of what I was thinking. And so what we're trying to do, like how are we going to use this small patio, right, to grow squash, that vine? Well, we're going to vertically trellis them to the sky, up the beanstalk. And we've done this last year already where we took a cattle guard, so like a livestock panel, thick wire, basically, you know, in fencing patterns. And
in fencing patterns, I love that.
Isn't that what you call it?
No. It's just a cattle panel.
Okay, whatever. A cattle panel, livestock panel. And they're pretty long. They're probably like 10 feet long and maybe like 5 feet wide, 4 to 5 feet.
Yeah, we have one that's, I would say, 4 and one that's 5.
Yeah. So what we're going to do, last year what we did is make an archway with that and then have grow bags on each side and just train to squash, and we'll get into what that means in a bit here, but train to squash to grow up the trellis to the sky. And we're hoping to do either that or an A-frame trellis, meaning just like an A, two of these cattle panels mm-hmm. coming together in a pyramid shape up top, and having that go over the patio so that we can still sit under it
yeah.
and chill while the plants grow up left and right. And yep. it'll look kind of like a, the way I'm envisioning it, it'll look like a little fairy wonderland in there.
Yeah, and it'll be nice because it'll actually provide us some privacy from our neighbors.
It could potentially, yeah.
When we're out on the back patio, so long as, you know, things grow.
Yeah.
And start going upwards.
Right.
Then we'll be good to go. But yeah, hopefully we'll still be able to access and use the back patio, but also get as much yield as humanly possible in a very small space.
Yep. And I like the idea. I mean, I did choose squash varieties that don't vine very much. And if we're thinking like maybe up to a 10-foot, you know, high headspace. So even if my vines now are only growing 4 to 6 feet or so, we can use that top space to hang
mm-hmm.
planters.
Yeah. So you basically hang a different style of grow bag. So it won't be the big black bags that we use, but you use a smaller kind of canvas bag and you can hang them all over the trellis.
Yeah.
And grow all sorts of different plants.
And I mean, it doesn't even have to be that. It can just simply be one of those balcony planters.
Yep, which we've got those too. So we're going to be reusing a lot of what we've already got.
Yeah.
So we don't have to go out and buy more.
Yeah, so envisioning it hopefully works out, but I'm thinking like it's going to work because we did it kind of last year and it worked really well. Mm-hmm. So they're just, vines are going to grow up and we're going to, in between wherever vines aren't growing, we can, or even where the vines are growing, but we can mm-hmm. have these hanging grow bags and also just these planters, sorry, hanging from the trellis.
Yeah. And we have talked a little bit about the support of the trellis just because,
right.
you know, when the wind comes through and things start moving around, we really don't want our trellis to end up in our neighbor's backyard.
Nope.
So the idea is that we're going to use wooden supports right. to secure the cattle panel to itself, basically.
On the bottom, so, basically.
Yeah, on the bottom, and then maybe one up at the top, and it'll just keep it from rocking back and forth. It'll just provide a little bit of structure there.
Right, and what we did last year that also worked super well, that was Lindy's idea, and I didn't think it would work, was...
It, of course, did.
Take, like, we took one of those 10-foot cattle panels, we made an archway, so we bent it, and then on each side of the panel, when it touches the ground, we had big grow bags on each side to support it and kind of squeeze mm-hmm. the panel in between them, and it held it in place super well, because the panel with tension is going to want to go out, and it's yep. like pushing against the grow bags, so... Yeah, it didn't move at all.
No.
And we had vines and squash growing up yeah. the whole thing. And
it definitely wasn't the prettiest. You know, you can make these the things really but pretty, but it was very functional and extremely easy to remove. So very, very renter friendly.
Yep, exactly.
That's what
this is all about.
I've watched a lot of videos about renter friendly, you know, balcony gardens and all these different things, and they don't think about water dripping down on their neighbors. That's a big problem. You don't want your water going through your balcony to your neighbor's balcony and soaking yeah. everything dirt all the time.
You also don't want blood dripping down.
Yeah, you know, when you're processing your deer and stuff.
That happened to me one time. That's
terrible. Really?
Yeah, I was hanging like fresh quarters out there and had just cut some meat and stuff and like set it out and... Yeah, some I noticed, and I'm like, oh no, some of the blood dripped down to my neighbor.
It's gonna be like cops called.
Yeah, it's not what it looks like. This is elk.
Okay, yeah.
Calm down.
So he says, but yeah, there's a lot of renter friendly ideas out there. So just having things that are very easy to remove and checking with whatever property management company or independent rental entity you're going through, and just making sure what you're doing is okay.
Yep.
Yep. Which we did double check.
We did double
check. We are good to go.
Good to go on that front. And then what I'm also trying to do with our setup now is, because we're going to do the grow bag, so it's going to have one squash plant per bag.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's all the, you know, these are like, usually we use 20-gallon grow bags for that, for the squashes, just to give them enough room. And there's going to be a lot of space around that plant. And especially at the beginning, while the squash is still growing up, like while it's developing, there's a lot of empty space. So in that empty space, we're going to plant radishes.
Mm-hmm.
Radishes, from the research I've done, are a great companion plant for squashes. One, they grow super quick. And like I said, they fit well in that space in between the squash. Also, they are a pest control for squash, because a common pest for squash are the squash bugs. And I guess the radishes, they produce like a pungent smell that the squash bugs don't really like. So it just can reduce the likelihood of having a bunch of squash bugs.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really cool. And also, I guess the radishes can improve the soil health in that they, because they're a member of the Brassica family, and I was reading that that family is known for its ability to break up compacted soil and improve soil health. So that can benefit the squash too, just by creating more drainage and aeration in the soil. Because, you know, as they grow, they push that soil around. And we also, once we harvest them, they're going to leave like little holes behind and whatnot. So, I'm really excited for that. And so that's for the companion plant there.
Yeah. And I know that we can do other companion planting as well, as far as, you know, lettuce and quick harvest seed to soil plants, lettuce and arugula, all those kind of things.
Yeah,
are really great for that as well.
Yeah, a little like more fast growing varieties of veggies to like interplant and get pretty crazy with it. But again, the easy ones I think we could do, like lettuce and whatnot, but I want to focus on like a few.
Yeah.
You can't do everything. I had when I had Stephen Cornett on the podcast, he said it so well last time, like he sees all these homesteaders trying to just, they try to do everything and they just become so overwhelmed. And it makes a lot more sense to just get good at a few things that you really like. And then you can always go to the local farmer and buy what you don't have. You can always trade with your other homesteading buddies who might be doing something else than you, growing something else, raising a different animal, you know?
Yep.
That's how local economies have worked forever.
Definitely.
It's tough to do everything, you know? Now next up, I want to get into just some pros of trellising squash specifically, because as you can tell, I'm really trying to convince you right now to grow your own squash and grow bags and vertically.
Yeah.
So, this was a big decision for why I chose squash too, as like the plant I want to focus on now. It's just because they do work really well for trellising.
Mm-hmm.
So, first of all, freeze up space, right? That's a no-brainer. I was mentioning earlier that the winter squash especially likes to vine all over the place. I saw some varieties like while I was shopping for seeds that have 20 to 20-foot vines.
Wow.
Imagine that. Like, you need a lot. You need
a
field.
You could weave those into a basket.
Yeah, you need a field for those. You really do.
Well, there's an idea. I wonder if we could do that.
I don't know. Maybe.
After harvest season, just weave them all into that. That'd be so sweet.
Yeah, that'd be cool. You should check it out. Hmm. There might be other people who had already done it. For most small-scale gardeners, it's just not a thing, squash, unless they're trellising them. Then another benefit of trellising or growing vertically for the squashes is that a lot more sunlight's going to get to the plant and the leaves. And it just produces happier plants. If you have them underground, you know, other vines are going to be growing over each other. And, you know, the leaves are hiding parts of the plant and whatnot, because squash produces really big leaves often. So having a trellis is just going to let more light get there.
Mm-hmm.
With that, you also get more airflow, which is pretty big here because the trellising going up allows more airflow to get there. And then you get less moisture buildup, and you have less chance of getting the fungal diseases like powdery mildew, which is a big issue for squashes. Anyone who's tried to grow squash or zucchini will be familiar with powdery mildew, because it is almost inevitable.
Like, yep.
There's some varieties that are resistant to it, but it's gonna come on your plants. And doing it vertically like this with the airflow being more pronounced, you're gonna just discourage that fungal disease from coming in. Another benefit would be easier to watch them develop and easier to get to the plants. So I was experiencing that last year for sure. Having them trellised up was just so nice for, checking on the plants. Like, do they have some weird bug boring through their veins, through their leaves? Do they have eggs under their leaves? Are there certain pests on there right now? Do the female flowers need to be pollinated? Because squash, you have a male and female flower, and the female flower needs to be pollinated for a squash to develop, like a fruit to develop properly. So some people actually go around and they hand pollinate. They take a male flower, break it off, and kind of like hand pollinate the females.
Right.
Especially if there's not a lot of pollinators around, like bees and whatnot.
Which you can help to entice bees to come by planting inside your garden bag or your grow bag, different companion flower plants that attract bees.
A note with that, though, after, I was super excited looking into companion stuff. Just like with anything in the world, every action has a reaction. You plant something to help your squash, to help attract more pollinators. Well, now it might also attract more pests.
Right.
So you got to be really careful with that stuff sometimes, but just, you got to do some research. You don't just want to plant any flower in there thinking that, I'm going to attract bees, because you might attract the aphid colony that's going to absolutely demolish your squash that you've been waiting for 100 days. Yeah. So going back to the benefits here, the pros, being able to see the plant develop, see it change, see if it needs something is a lot easier if it's growing up to the sky.
I was helping out with my neighbors this last year with their garden, and they had all of their squash plants on the ground. And I noticed a big difference between their fruit rotting and ours. That's
another thing,
Ours did not rot. We might have had a little bit of like a powdery mildew problem in some of them.
It wasn't powdery mildew. It was another fungal disease at the end of the season.
Yep. But over there, they had the same kind of fungal thing going on, lots of black leaves. Some of the fruits grew really big and they were great, beautiful plants. The rest of them rotted on the vine before they even started to get to maturity, but you couldn't see them.
That's the thing. If they're growing and sprawled out on the ground, you often just, especially if you're growing them in a large space, you might not see the
There's
the fruit is rotting.
Theirs took up maybe like an eighth of an acre. It was insane.
Wow.
They had two squash plants growing out of one compost pile, and it took over everything.
Kind of fun too. Like once we have more space, I definitely want to do that too. But for now, it just seems a lot better to trellis them. And that also goes into the pest prevention kind of, because that's another benefit of growing vertically. Not only does it tend to keep the fungal diseases away, like powdery mildew, but also a lot of these ground-crawling insects that get to the plant via the ground, like squash bugs, like the ones I mentioned earlier, they like to come from the ground, and then they will hide on the underside in the shade of the leaves. Well, now if you're trellising up, a lot of the leaves will be, just in positions where there's not a lot of shade for the bugs to really comfortably sit under. So
they're less likely to stay.
They're less likely to stay or even get there. And then another thing would be the ground scavengers like mice and whatnot. Also a lot tougher for them to get there when you're vertically growing the squash.
I would agree.
The ground squirrels and whatnot. And another thing is, here in Montana, you got to worry about rattlesnakes.
In certain areas, definitely.
Not so much over here, but if you grow more, Eastern, anywhere around us, you got to worry about a rattlesnake sitting under those squash vines on the ground.
That was one thing we dealt with when I was a kid a lot, is whenever you went to the garden, you had a stick. You kind of beat the bush a little bit just to see if you hear something. Otherwise, you're good to go.
Yeah.
But you always double check before you reach down into a shady spot, because snakes really, really like, at night they want to go out and sit on the road where the rocks are all heated up. And then during the day they want to go sit in the shade underneath all of your plants.
They come out in the sun too, though. to sun themselves.
Yeah, definitely. But when it's 100 degrees outside, they're going to be in the shade of your plants.
For them, they're going to, yep.
Yep. And then at night, they're going to be sitting on the road, on your driveway, wherever, so they can soak up that heat again.
Right. Hey, sorry for the interruption, but I want to jump in real quick to let you know how you can best support the Year of Plenty podcast. First of all, make sure you hit that follow button in your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. Then please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And if you leave a review, you can send me a screenshot to either my email address, my Instagram, or X profile. And once I have that screenshot, I'm going to provide you a link to my food preservation ebook for free. So that's definitely something to take advantage of. And if you have friends who you think would get value from the show here, send them an episode and please bring them along for the ride. The more, the merrier. Now, one more thing, if you really want to help support the show is beyond like buying from Montana Block with the code Year of Plenty, you can also become a patron of the show over on Patreon for as little as $2 a month. That's greatly appreciated and really, really helps me keep the lights on. Links to everything I just talked about will be in the podcast episode description. Easy for you to find there. Okay, that's it. Thank you so much for listening and supporting the show. Let's get back to the episode. So those were kind of the pros. Why the yeah? Why are you laughing? Yeah,
it was just a little bit of a tangent there. Sorry about that.
Tangents are fine. Those are the benefits, I guess. Pros, benefits, whatever you want to call it, of trellising the squash or growing it vertically. Now we want to share some actual like trellis ideas. Like, how do these setups look like to grow vertically? We mentioned kind of what we did with the cattle panel, and I honestly think that's the most secure budget way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, doing an A-frame with the trellis. So an A-frame trellis, meaning
it looks like an A.
It looks like an A, pyramid shape almost, or the archway with the cattle panels or the livestock panels. That's a great way to do it. You can get these panels from ranchers around here. Used, they're not super expensive.
Yeah, just hop on Facebook Marketplace and look up, you know, fencing materials, and I bet you somebody's got something.
Yeah. Then another thing we did last year was bamboo or branch teepees. So you can buy bamboo sticks, or you can use just really straight branches like hazelnut, something you got outside around you, maybe like choke cherry or something like that. And take like 3 or 4 of those and set them up in a teepee shape. You can either dig them in, like put them into the ground, or what we did with the grow bags was just have the bamboo sticks inside the grow bags coming together in a point up top in a teepee shape. And then I bought these like rubber, there's actual rubber things specifically for this, kind of like a rubber band.
I don't know where those are.
I know. They didn't fit the bamboo I bought. So we went with actually just tying rope or string around the top to kind of secure it up top to build that teepee. I guess you could also use duct tape.
You could use hair bands. You could use a little bit of anything. I mean, hair bands would be great. You make it as tight as you want.
Yeah, that's true. Hair bands would probably work. Just something to really like keep that together up top. And then you can train those vines from the squash to grow up that bamboo. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into the training a little later, kind of how to do that. It sounds more complicated than it is. It's pretty straightforward. Then what you can also do is, you might already have like one of those tomato cages laying around for your tomatoes, because a lot of plants already grow vertically and they need support like tomatoes. So you can use those for your like zucchini squash. Mm-hmm. Instead of the zucchini bush, kind of after a while, once it grows, they tend to just flop to the ground and keep growing on the ground. You can keep them in that tomato cage and keep it all more secure and get the benefits of growing that zucchini, that summer squash vertically. Then I have in my notes here the A-frame trellises. We kind of talked about those already. Then there is a string and stick wall trellis that's super low budget that I found. And I'm going to blend in a picture here. I haven't shown this to you, Lindy, yet. But this is basically what it looks like. So it's basically like, imagine just taking about a bunch of sticks from outside, cutting them into the same size, and then weaving string between them to kind of create like a hanging ladder.
The only thing I would mention on that is be careful where you put it and what plant you put it on if you're hanging it on the wall.
Why?
Because the siding of your house is going to get very, very, very hot.
Okay, that's true.
So if you can put that not on a southern-facing wall that has good airflow, that would be really good.
Right.
Because it won't get too terrible hot.
Yeah. I mean, you could even hang this stuff from a tree.
Oh, yeah. If you can hang it from somewhere else, that would be,
you know,
ideal.
It doesn't have to be on the wall.
Yeah. The way they have theirs, I think that might get a little bit too hot for right. some people's.
And in the video, I'll blend in the picture so you guys mm-hmm. can see it.
But that would be a fun, you know, activity to do with your girlfriends on a Saturday.
Is
you just tie some sticks and strings
together. Hanging ladder, trellises. I mean, it's got to be the most low budget one on the list here. Yeah, I mean, you could also just use a T-post for, you know, vertical stuff. It might be a bit hard to grow a squash up, but I think it would work. Mm-hmm. I would probably use a T-post for some other, like, you know, if you're growing tomatoes and whatnot, propping those up. But you could potentially use them for the squash and whatnot, those vining plants. Mm-hmm. Then there's a Florida weave trellis that you can look up. Lindy, I'll show you that one. That one's supposed to be effective. It's also more like for beans and tomatoes, but basically mm-hmm. you take two T-posts or big sticks, have them, you know, 5-10 foot apart, and then take good like twine, good string, and
weave them together.
Connect them to each T-post, and then you weave the plants through there.
I see.
You're coming up. So you're basically creating like a weave. Mm-hmm. Is it what it's called? A weave?
Yeah. A net. I don't know what you would call it. A woven net structure.
Yeah. So I mean, you'll see the picture.
Yeah.
But or just look up Florida weave trellis system. And I guess, people like that one a ton for tomatoes. But I think you'd be able to use it for zucchini really well too. Mm-hmm. And potentially some of the vining squash, like the one I was talking about, you know, the ones that have smaller, rounder fruit. Mm-hmm. I maybe wouldn't use this for a winter squash that produces a 20-pound fruit, you know?
Yeah, it would be very hard to support your fruit on that.
Unless it's like a smaller fruit variety. Yeah,
definitely.
Now, the other thing that I saw that I thought was very creative that you can do at home is using an old bike wheel with the grow bags or pots and a stick. Mm. Or like, an iron rod. Basically have the iron rod or stick in the middle of your pot or grow bag. Then take the old biking wheel on top horizontally, like perpendicularly. And then from each, like from the side of the wheel, you just take string again. And I'm missing a word here. What is it called when you attach two strings? Tension. What is the
tension?
Word?
Yeah, tension.
No, there's a word for connecting.
Taut? I have no idea.
When you connect string between two things.
Strung?
There's a word.
You string it up.
that's the word. I have like the word in German in my head, and I'm like thinking there's got to be a word for it in English, but I just can't
think of it. I have no idea what it would be.
Anyway, having that string go from the pot to the top of that wheel. Mm-hmm. And again, I'll blend in a picture. So it's kind of hard to explain over just the audio. But then you can like grow beans up that string or again, smaller squashes or grapes, whatever, like all sorts of vining plants. And we'll get into more of those later.
Yeah, that's very creative.
Yeah, right. And
that's a very good use of space,
I think. And budget too. You can probably get all those things at the landfill. Yeah.
Definitely.
And another great one, I mentioned A-frame trellises, and you can build those out of the cattle panel and whatnot, or you can buy them. But why not use an old wooden ladder?
Mm-hmm. Or pallets.
Or pallets even, exactly. Mm-hmm. And you can just, you know, get those for super cheap. You can probably find an old wooden ladder at a garage sale or something.
Yeah, if you, like I'm saying, if you go on Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist, any of those places, people are giving that stuff away all the time.
Yep.
It's free. You just have to go and pick it up.
All right. And then there's a bunch more like things you can buy. Like there's just one cool one from Epic Gardening, but it's like $150. And it's basically like a vertical tower with a bunch of pots hanging, pots connected to it.
Yeah, I like those. So they're just expensive.
They're expensive.
Yeah, but
we're trying to do it in a budget. You could do this.
Yeah.
Probably buy once and probably lasts a long time.
I think those could be a great option for people growing indoors or someone that wants to buy it once.
Yeah. The thing is, so if you're growing indoors with that kind of stuff, you need something that won't let all the water run out into the ground. So
true.
Indoors is tough. Indoors, I would probably go with, like, you know, those hydroponic systems.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, there's a lot of more you could do. These are just some ideas that we've been thinking about. If you can do the livestock panel, I think do that.
Yeah.
So I've been talking about training squash vines and kind of like growing them vertically. You need to train them a bit. So I've been doing more research around it. Last year it worked really well, but, you know, I was just kind of looking at how can we do it even better. And I have discovered some things that we didn't do that I want to do this year. First of all, training them up the trellis just means you're taking the vine once they start developing. Once they kind of start going over the grow bag, you take them and you start to weave them through something. Or if you just have a stick, you just connect them to the trellis via like a zip tie or a piece of string, you know, like on the bamboo teepee trellises, we use string to tie the vines onto the
very loosely the
stick. Tied. Yep. Loosely tied is important because, and Lindy.
Yeah, I did make a mistake with some sunflowers this last year. And I used the little, they're like the bread ties.
Mm-hmm.
And I did it too tight. And the next week when I went back, they completely suffocated and killed the sunflowers.
Yeah, because the sunflower is going to keep growing, getting bigger, a bigger stem, and it's going
to. So
grow around that, basically.
Yeah, you can definitely kill your plants by doing that. So just have plenty of wiggle room and, you know, check them every couple of weeks. If you see a spot that's starting to have an imprint of the string, move the string or take it off because you could possibly kill your plants.
Right. And it is a bit tricky on like the straight, like the bamboo. It was a bit tricky to keep that string on there. So you could probably use some duct tape first and get creative with it. You know?
Or you can also drill very small pilot holes through the bamboo and feed your string through.
That's probably much prettier.
Yeah.
Way to do it.
Aesthetically pleasing.
Duct tape doesn't look too nice.
Mm-hmm. That's like the guy way of doing things versus the girl.
So that's training them, is just supporting them, kind of edging them toward where you want to go, which is in this case vertical.
Mm-hmm.
And then also it's best to like train 6 to 8 vines per plant, and make sure you cut off all the other vines, like at the base of the, if new vines start growing at the base, you can cut those off. Or sometimes vines start creating side shoots, you can cut those off. You just kind of want to do like 6 to 8 good vines, kind of train those to grow up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something we didn't do last year.
Yep.
We also didn't have 6 to 8 vines per plant. So maybe it was just the varieties we have, or there was just nutrition missing.
We definitely had some nutritional issues in our soil that we caught very late in the game. So I think our gardening experience last year could have been much better.
Yeah, it was still good. We got a good amount of squash, but
especially for the first year. But I do think that our plants were definitely stunted.
Yep.
So I think there might have been more. The way that I think about it is like pruning a tomato plant. You don't want to keep on all the suckers. You just want to keep the main structure branches of the plant. That way the rest of the plant focuses on the fruits versus creating more greenery and more leaves.
All right. Yeah. It's similar here.
Mm-hmm.
And then two cons of growing the squashes that I should have probably brought up earlier when I was talking about the benefits and the pros, is that the trellis squash will need more water. Why? Well, water evaporates a lot easier from the leaves when they're growing vertically. Just there's more airflow, you know, there's less moisture being kept inside and it's also not close to the ground. That's usually a lot more moist.
There's less shade.
And then the squash vines, when they do grow on the ground, when they sprawl on the ground, they tend to send new roots down. So they anchored themselves underground and sent new roots down to get to more water. You won't have this here.
Yep.
Because you're growing vertically. So more water is needed. It's a little bit of a bummer, but also not that big of an issue, I think, for how we're going to plant a grow now, you know, in the grow bags. And we have plenty of water around. One other thing is the grow bags on top of that tend to lose water easier. So you can also though work with some sort of mulch, like wood chips or hay, and kind of have mulch on top of the grow bag, on top of the soil. If you have planted radishes, that creates a bit of a mulch layer there, or like just a protection from the soil, so not as much can evaporate as easily. And Lindy, you had a good idea with this mulching too.
You can take the mulch, if it's a nice fine mulch, and layer it on the bottom and start kind of layering up the sides and filling in the center with dirt. So you'll have a dirt pod encapsulated in the mulch. So from all sides and on the bottom, you're not going to be losing quite as much water. So that's something like you can do. I think it'll take a little bit more time to fill up the bags, just because you need to do it kind of in layers to have the walls.
Yeah, and you also got to think, like, and you know, what's more important, having soil there or wood chips? Because you're limited in your grow bag.
Yeah, I think if you can find a very fine mulch that's not big, chunky pieces of wood, I don't think that will work. You won't have enough soil. But if you can find a very thin layer, I think that would be ideal.
Yeah, or at least have it just on the bottom and on top, I think would also be pretty helpful. And then the last con, I think, that I noticed last year, and it's not really a con too much because it's easily, like, avoidable, but it's just some of the squashes have fruits that can grow really big, and if you're vertically growing them, those fruits might get so heavy that it breaks your vines. It just damages your squash plant because gravity and weight. So what you can do, and that's what we did last year, is create little hammocks, which is kind of fun for your squash fruits. You can do old t-shirts to support them, or what we did that I thought was even better because it has more airflow and doesn't get soaked like cotton, is just these little, what is that stuff called?
It's just plastic netting material. Yeah, you can find it at any hardware store and get thousands of yards, or you can get like 10 to 20 yards.
Yeah.
Just get the small amount and you cut out a little square, however much you need, and just make a little squash hammock.
Yeah.
And tie it onto the fence, that when the squash keeps growing, you know, it's not so tight that it can't expand. It'll just keep kind of pushing on that netting until it's at the point where you can harvest it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's kind of what we're planning and doing. Now, I know, Lindy, you've picked out, you've just done some research into like plants that are good for vertical gardening, not just squash. You know, there's a bunch of other plants that like to grow vertically. So what you got?
Yeah, so tomatoes are a really big one, and you want to get determinant varieties like Aroma tomato. Cucumbers are fantastic.
They also grow more like a vine.
The cucumbers?
Yeah, I have never done cucumbers, but...
Yeah. Yeah, but cucumbers can be great. Peppers, like bell peppers or chili peppers. Chili peppers do really, really well with some sort of a vertical garden. They don't get super tall, but they get tall enough to where the plant arms are going to start laying down. So having something to kind of keep them in works great.
So here, probably again, that Florida weave I could see being really good here, or one of those tomato cages maybe.
Or even the bamboo trellis, and you just tie string around the whole plant and let it grow through the center.
Yep.
But they bush out a lot, so it's kind of hard to find the peppers.
Yeah.
Is the only problem I really saw with those last year when I was helping out some friends of ours. And then green beans, pole bean varieties are the best. And then
actually the green beans, if anyone's listening from Bozeman, my coworker said they do super well here.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I've heard that from multiple people now.
Yeah. So long as you don't have ground squirrels. Well, our next door neighbors, they have a really big ground squirrel problem, and they tried pretty much everything to keep the ground squirrels away from them, including, I think, four or five of those big containers of pepper from Costco. They sprinkled it all over the outside, so when the ground squirrel went and smelled, they'd get the pepper.
Like pepper spray for nose. Ground squirrels.
Yeah.
Pepper traps.
Yeah. And that actually did work fairly well.
What they should have done is given tributes. Like leave out tributes for yeah. the ground squirrels, like donuts or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If there's a donut, they're not going to go for the...
Yeah. Yeah. They were terrible. They actually dug all the way from the field, probably 600 meters into the garden, up through a 4-foot garden bed. Jeez. Into the center of their garden bed.
So oh my God.
They were stealing like all of their corn, all of their beets, all of their squash from this one bed. And there's just a big hole.
That's when you bring in the ground squirrel squad.
Yeah. We couldn't figure out how 22s. To keep them out. It was terrible. It's
called,
anyways.
It's called 22s, Lindy.
Moving on. Zucchini is Shoot great. Him. Pumpkins are really good. Again, you have to support their fruits. Grapes. There are cold hardy grape varieties like Concord or Catawba, I think is how you say it.
They definitely are. I mean, we even have wild grapes in Wisconsin.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I used to collect those all the time.
That's great. Yeah. I didn't know that we could grow grapes up here. A coworker of mine has been growing his own and I would love to do that someday. Mm-hmm. Obviously not now. but at some point I think it would be very fun. Melons are another one that can actually grow really well here if you get the right variety and you start them.
Like the Bozeman melon I was talking about
earlier. Yeah. And if you start them early enough.
So we tried the
cantaloupe
last year. Also like a short grow season variety. Mm-hmm. We got some fruit on there, but
our dog ate it.
Yeah, Waffles the dog.
Yep, we were pretty bummed.
Decided to make those fruit his toy.
Yeah, we were so excited to have. I think we had two of them on there, and he ate them.
Two melons. And one day I came back from work and looking the ground, and I'm like, no way, and just. Teeth marks all throughout the melon.
Melon. Yeah. I wish we could do lemons. That would be cool.
He wouldn't have eaten the lemon. He would have bit into it and been like, ugh.
So all of those are really good to grow on the ground up. Other plants that you can grow in your vertical garden alongside your other ground plants. So the idea of this is that you're growing these plants on your vertical structure, but they're never going to touch the ground. So say we have our big cattle panel and it's arched up over. You've got squash surrounding the perimeter of it on the ground.
Yep.
You're going to hang other grow bags up on top of the trellis and grow your plants up from there.
Right.
So they have plenty of sunlight. They have plenty of air. And they won't be competing with the rest of your plants. So you can really, really maximize the vertical space. And some of the plants that work really well for that are going to be lettuce, spinach, and kale. Pretty much every different kind of herb that there is. Radishes, onions, as far as like green onions or scallions, and strawberries.
Yep.
So those are all things that you can continue to grow, not in planters on the ground, but in your vertical structures.
Right.
Which is pretty great. And the way that you grow them is very similar to that kind of hammock squash support idea, but you're using more of a canvas style material,
like, and you're just going to hang hemp bags would be great. And you were saying you could even make your own out of burlap.
Yep. So you could make your own if you have access to a sewing machine of some sort and material, or you can go online and, you know, just buy some.
Yeah, I like that. They're just the hanging pots. You know,
yeah.
Utilizing some of that trellis space that the squash aren't using.
And the nice thing is you water from the top down. So you're going to water all of the herbs on the very top of your trellis. Those are going to leak down to the rest of your herbs. So you don't have to water every single one of them. You don't really want them dripping on your squash leaves because you can promote some bad bacteria that way. But if you hang them on the inside, they're going to drip down inside instead of outside on your squash.
Yeah, and we're also imagining it kind of having them above the squash line, like the tree line in the mountains.
Yeah. they'll be in the alpine zone.
when the vines stop, that's when you have on the top part of the arched cattle panel trellis that we're building, that's where we're going to have those.
And if you're growing, say, in like a big terracotta pot or another big structure that's very sturdy on the ground, you can hang those off of those planters too If your planter that's on the ground is sturdy enough to support something else hanging on it, you could hang all sorts of different plants around that planter. It would have to be a
pretty big pot, though, probably. But you're saying like on the perimeter, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that.
Smaller plants, you know. There's definitely options there.
There is options
there. And carrots, those are the other one that actually, from what I've seen, do fairly well in grow bags, which I didn't know. I thought you definitely had to have them in the ground. Apparently, you can do them in grow bags.
You can do grow bags.
Yeah. So those are another one that you can do.
Yeah, as like a companion plant, even.
Mm-hmm.
Like how we're planning to do the radishes with the squashes. In that extra space, you could do carrots. You'd have to see if carrots do well with squash.
Yeah.
You know, some plants don't like to be too close together.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's it. That's kind of what we've been thinking about. Hopefully, you guys got some value just from hearing what we're planning to do. And hopefully there was some good inspiration in there for you to start growing your own vertical garden and thinking about your own setup.
Yeah. I have to say, Poldy, I'm a little disappointed.
Yeah.
We haven't done
the dad joke. Why didn't you stop me earlier?
Well, I thought about it now.
I also forgot the whole intro part, you know, the whole like,
you know, it's
here's how it's you can support the podcast. Yeah, it is a Monday. maybe we'll cut that in at the beginning. I'll just do a little post.
No, we can leave it at the end. It's okay.
Yeah, I guess only the true OGs who listen to the end get to hear the dad joke today.
Yeah.
So don't look now.
I'm not looking. It's going to show up on my screen too.
Lindy, why shouldn't you tell a secret in a garden?
Why?
Because the potatoes have eyes and the corn has ears.
Wow.
Oh,
that's actually really good.
That's a good one, huh?
Wow.
Oh, I stunned her.
Now we know why all of my secrets just go right out the window.
never say in a garden.
Everyone knows. Okay, I've got one for you too. Don't look here. You know, I've been really, really happy with spring starting up this year. It's been feeling really good. Lots of sunshine. And, you know, I remember the first day of spring this year very, very vividly. I was so excited that I wet my plants.
Oh, nice. That's a good one.
You like it?
I like that one. Wet her plants.
Yes, mom joke for the win.
Good.
Thank you.
Good. I'm happy you're coming to join the
The joke squad.
The joke squad.
Yeah, you're welcome. I have to carry this team somehow.
Yeah, I was about to say not just me carrying the team in the back. So hopefully you guys enjoyed this episode. Definitely, absolutely harvest that follow button on the podcast apps, whether that be Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or over on X and YouTube where I'm posting the videos. YouTube channel isn't quite there yet. I'm working on it. I'm just thinking about just how I'm going to set it up and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But all the videos are already on X under the highlight section on my profile. You can find them pretty easily. And eventually, yes, they will be on YouTube for you guys to check out. And, you know, share an episode with your friend who you think is going to get value from the podcast here. That's one of the best ways you can help support in growing the show. If you get value from it, you can become a patron for as little as $2 a month on Patreon. And that's super, super helpful and really appreciate it. We use all that money to put it back into the show, you know, buy new gear, new podcasting gear, better camera, just make it better in general and just pump out more episodes for all of you. And then another thing you can do is check out our podcast sponsor, Montana Block, who are these awesome people from Billings, Montana, small family company, and they make these really high quality end grain butcher blocks, specialty cutting boards, even magnetic wooden knife holders, all from American wood. Everything actually that they use is American materials, and it's all handcrafted. They really put kind of like their heart and soul into every product, and just super nice people. And I'm very thankful for them sponsoring the podcast and giving us a discount code for you, the Year of Plenty podcast listeners. So you can use the code Year of Plenty on their website in the promo box when you go to checkout, and that'll get you 15% off their entire shop. So You know, upgrade your kitchen with some really high quality butcher blocks, for example, or cutting boards, or make a gift out of one for to your friends or family members. You can even get like a fun saying or a logo or something engraved into wood. So mm-hmm. one of the cutting boards I have, the butcher block, actually has the Year of Plenty podcast logo. And then the other one, our giant, we have this big, big wooden specialty cutting board from them that can hold an entire elk quarter. So it's going to mm-hmm. be, it's become our everyday cutting board, but it's going to be our wild game butchering board too. And that one has an elk engraved with all the different cuts. Mm-hmm. That was Lindy's idea. It was my Christmas present.
Yeah, a good friend of mine did really all the sweet. Art for it. It was pretty sweet.
So yeah, check him out at mtblock.com and use that code Year of Plenty for 15% off. And a part of that sale is going to kick back to the Year of Plenty podcast. So, you know, you help and support the show that way. And it's really a win-win-win for everyone. You guys get a discount. Montana Block, you're supporting a small family-owned business that's really trying here in the U.S., mm-hmm. building here in the U.S., doing it all in Montana, and then you're supporting your favorite food podcast, the Year of Plenty podcast. Awesome. So, yeah, and if you guys want to, like, connect with me personally, you can do that on Instagram mm-hmm. or over on X. Those are kind of the two platforms I'm most active on. And don't forget to leave a 5-star review. That goes a really long way to help grow the show as well. Either on Apple Podcasts or Spotify is where you want to do that. And then send me a screenshot of your review to either X or Instagram, like just send a DM, or to my email address, which is theyearofplenty@gmail.com. And then once I have that screenshot as proof that you did it, I'm going to send you a link to download my food preservation ebook for free. Mm-hmm. So definitely take advantage of that.
Yeah, definitely. Cool.
All right. Until next time, let's keep exploring real food together. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.